Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to another step in the leadership journey on our series named exactly that on USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. And joining me is our guest host for this series, Brian Kite. BK, we are in the second half of the season, most places around the country, and it's a time, I think, where things are going very well. Things are mediocre for some people, which they always feel it's worse than it is. And then there's those guys who maybe are looking ahead towards the end of the season, unfortunately. You have some of those situations. And, you know, I think in any of those, as we've talked about, and our topic today is going to be about burnout. And it's funny that even those situations that go really well can cause the same burnout maybe that some of the situations that are going poorly are. So that's going to be the topic. As always, Brian, excited to talk to you today about these things. And as I said, take another step in the leadership journey.
Yeah, that last piece that you mentioned, one, good to be here. Always good to be with you and with the audience. That last piece you mentioned is interesting because you're right. Success creates as much, if not more, examples of burnout than even failure does. And I think that's interesting. There's some conversations. I'll make a note here in my notes and I'll come back to it later in this discussion. But I think there's something we misunderstand about leadership and creating culture that most people don't talk about. It doesn't fit the narrative. And other times marketing, it fools us, if not downright lies to us about what happens when we become good leaders and create good culture. But specific to the topic of burnout, it's a conversation that is not had publicly often and is had privately a lot. I know you've had conversations about burnout with other coaches. I have. And I think we can even look in our own lives that when we feel, if we ever have felt, the sensation or feeling of burnout, we don't talk about it publicly or feel comfortable talking about it publicly very often, if ever. That even in our own lives, when it comes to the topic of, again, whatever burnout would be, right? Whatever you might associate with that word, we typically don't talk about it publicly. And why do you think it is, Keith, that people don't talk about burnout as publicly as they talk about it privately?
I just don't think it fits, especially when you look at coaching. It doesn't fit in our culture of what we're supposed to talk about. I mean, we'll thump our chests about the grind. And we're grinding and I'm working 16-hour days and I slept in my office the other day. And we know those aren't good things necessarily, but that whole idea of I'm going to outwork the other guy, you know, there's a little bit of that ego and it's, I think people take it as a sign of their strength, of their mental toughness. So when you get to the other side of that and some of that, you know, the feeling of desire, because I don't think anybody says, well, I've just had it. I don't love coaching anymore. It's not really that because there's a lot of things they do love about it, but it's not that easy to admit that you've hit that stage where I'm a little bit overwhelmed with this. Like the feelings I'm having about this aren't as positive as they used to be. And it's flipped the other way. So it's just not really a cool thing to talk about. You have to, I think, have some of those guys who you could sit down and have those honest conversations with and get some input from and maybe help you solve some of the issues you're having. But for the most part, I think a lot of coaches just, they'll eat that and find a way to work through it.
It's a great point you make about doesn't fit into the culture or the ethos, right? The identity of a coach or frankly, even the coaching community, the shared culture or what the external community expects of a coach. Because what was on my mind, in addition to all of that, what was on my mind is I think one of the big factors why coaches don't talk about it is they're afraid of the judgment that would come from the people who would hear that from them and the lack of empathy they would receive for that burnout, which, by the way, is real. Right? But I'm trying to picture, okay, let's take Bill O'Brien down at the Houston Texans, right? He's got some talent and has been an NFL coach now for a few years. He's got obviously one of the best defenders in the NFL in J.J. Watt, got one of the best bright young quarterbacks in Deshaun Watson. If Bill O'Brien came out right now in Texas and said publicly, man, I'm really struggling with burnout, just not asking for anything, he just said it, right? I'm really struggling with burnout. I'm stretched thin. I'm worn down. I've been on this sprint and we haven't crossed the finish line yet. And we've been trying to get to, and we've been trying to win playoff games. And it just really it's taken so much energy from me and we have not made the progress. I'm just really feeling burned out in my job right now. Do you think the public or his fans or Texans fans or NFL fans or NFL media or Skip Bayless or Shannon Sharp or whoever else is commenting on, you think they would give him empathy and be like, man, you know what? I should really care about that guy. That sounds like it's a real thing for him. You know, that's tough, man. Let's give him some space to operate so that he can be his best self and really help as a leader on that team. You think that would be what people would say?
No. He'd be blown up on social media. He'd be blown up on the different, you know, shows that analyze that, the talk shows, the NFL Network, whatever it might be, criticized highly for expressing that, and probably have some issues with his front office who would be looking at all that closely.
And the average and individual fan, outside of commentary on media designed to get clicks and views and watches, who basically lie to the public on fake discussions and arguments to entertain people for hours at a time so they can get ratings and sell ads and keep everybody watching, which is why I never turn on any of those things, because they're essentially propped up reality television. If you criticize Real Housewives, but you watch Undisputed, right? It's as hypocritical as it gets. It's just around a topic that you like. Outside of those things, right? Not that I have any strong opinions on that, but just a quick little note. Outside of those spaces, do you think the average fan watching, just commentary generally on Twitter, do you think if Bill O'Brien said that and flipped open, then we flipped open Twitter, do you think you'd see a lot of just individual tweets from people not getting paid, just sharing their thoughts? Do you think there'd be a lot of empathy from fan?
No, we don't do that.
Do you think people would disagree on principle? Do you think they would disagree on principle and say, that's the job, you accepted it, if you're not capable of dealing with it, get out? You feel like that would happen?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I've kind of have seen that here recently, even in the high school space, on some stories that have, you know, come to the attention of the media, even one this particular week. And we don't know all the things behind it, but, you know, a coach resigns because the administrators are on the sideline telling him he can't run up the score and, you know, whatever. I mean, you know, blown up, supported. I mean, for that guy, it was probably 50-50. But it's all those stresses. And no, you don't get much sympathy. You don't get much empathy, I should say, for if you have those kinds of feelings. So you don't talk about it.
Correct. And I think that leads into, I don't know that there was a time where you got that kind of empathy. I was reading this morning from a book called The Lessons of History, and it's one of the most impactful books that I've put my hands on in a long time, with the most information and the fewest amount of pages. I've really been enjoyed reading it. And so I just, my mind is framed while I'm talking to you right now around old monarchs and oligarchs and presidents and czars and emperors and people who led things throughout history and all the different ways and structures of different stuff. And I doubt that, you know, the emperor of ancient China would get empathy from his subjects if he expressed burnout, you know, back in his time. So I don't think this is a new thing, but it is something to acknowledge that anytime a human being feels an emotion that they don't feel free to express without facing threats and being devalued, that makes us feel trapped. And coaches already feel threatened and trapped in our modern world because of a lot of stuff that's going on. If we put on top of that some kind of sensation of burnout, and we don't even feel like it's almost, Keith, like, and this is where I wanted to start with this, and then I want to come to what do we do with burnout and how do we alleviate it? And then, you know, really importantly, how do we stay away from it? But I wanted to start with this portion because it's almost like if you're in it, you can't even acknowledge it because it's not even something that you are supposed to feel. Then we get into a very dangerous place of we're trying to actually hide it. We're trying to hide it. And I want to appeal also to the personal side of this, because if you're feeling burnout that you feel like you've got to hide so as not to reveal it or show it or admit or acknowledge weakness, and you go home and you in any way feel like you have to hide it from home or you don't get empathy at home, and you have to keep on that face even when you go back to your house, and you have to hide it from that relationship with your spouse or your significant other or whoever it is that's at home with you, and you're faking it in that environment as well. Well, now you're trapped at a much deeper emotional level. It's one thing to be trapped professionally. It's another thing to be trapped professionally and also feel like you've got to hide it personally, because you also need to put on a face at home. Because I would say, Keith, that at least in my experience from observing and talking with people and with friends and just sort of being an observationist of the world and a student of history, expressing burnout at home isn't exactly easy either, or common for wives, right? It's still somewhat, there's taboo that revolves all the way around a mom expressing, hey, I need time off. Like, I'm burned out. Like, you're not allowed to be frustrated with your children, or like, you know, you're a mom, so you have to be completely emotionally dialed in all the time and fully capable of carrying it no matter what. Like, for whatever reason, you know, and then it is normal to get burned out in that environment, right? It is normal to get run down as a head coach and feel overwhelmed. Those are normal things. They're just not normal to talk about for whatever reason. And then we treat them with kid gloves a lot of times because the reaction is so intense. And then we try to stay away from anything on the outsides, like on the extremes. We just try to sit in the middle, go forward, and then kind of hide it all and brush it under the rug until it blows up. And so I just, you know, that's why, you know, Urban Meyer wrote or I shouldn't say wrote, he participated in an article called The Lone Wolf a few years ago, talking about him dealing with anxiety and, you know, I don't think he phrased it burnout, but it essentially was, even if they didn't use that phrase. And it was a great article for two reasons. Number one, he was just really honest about what was really going on, and it was handled very well. I thought the article was handled well. I thought he expressed it well. Number two is that privately, a lot of coaches at a lot of levels of sports reached out and said, thank you. I thought, one, I was the only one who felt this way. Number two, I didn't know anybody was allowed to talk about this, but like, that's what I feel like. But they didn't do it publicly, and they didn't do it in an article, and they didn't. So if this topic is one that's real for you, or if this topic is one that, you know, if you're a younger coach or if you're at a stage of your career where you have more to go, or you're going to be choosing to, or be placed into an environment that might ask everything from you, where burnout might be risked. One, keep listening and dialing in. And number two is go read that article, The Lone Wolf, Urban Meyer. You should be able to Google it and find it. I forget exactly who wrote it or where. I think it was a Bleacher Report article, maybe, because it speaks to what we're talking about here. So do you remember that article, Keith?
I don't, but I remember, you know, what Urban went through, basically, you know, winding up his time with Florida and how he went about really, I think, getting focused to be able to go back into things and, you know, get into a high stress environment again, you know, with a lot of expectations and excel in it. But it's you know, it seems like reading about him, you know, he's dealt with that, some of those things throughout his career and you know, learned from the experiences.
And he's a good example of what happens publicly when something like that were to happen, because, you know, you do a any social media search of him, obviously from the public eye, and he's the most, he's the coach that, in, at least in the college football world, the football world, that moves the media needle the most. I mean, but he's still crushed and ridiculed, like brutal humor around, oh, don't worry, he'll just take another heart attack, or, oh, hey, he'll just have another health scare. I mean, it's like everybody takes delight in making jokes and criticizing something they don't know and they don't understand, because the guy went through a hard situation and had a physical breakdown, you know. And I think he handles that criticism, at least in terms of how he reacts to it, he handles that criticism with at this stage, with a lot of grace in terms of the, you know, the public facing willingness to not react to it in that way. So let's talk this, Keith. Let's talk about sources of burnout. What do you think are the sources of burnout? Where does it come from?
Well, as I was listening to you talk about that, I was thinking about that exact thing and how I've come out of some seasons feeling, you know, really energized and excited and can't wait to get back at this again and remember, you know, times of coaching that last game and by the next morning already having plans for the next season, and then other seasons coming out of it and saying, wow, I really need these holidays that are ahead of us and I just need to get away from this. And so it's been, you know, varying degrees of it, you know, some more than others, and some that you would say, you know, getting some of that type of feeling that, wow, you know, I want to get away from this. And then, you know, do I want to go back to it, and asking those kinds of questions and thinking of those seasons that I came out of. And it really didn't have a lot to do with the wins and the losses. It had to do with, for lack of better words, kind of the routine that I could get into. Some of the best seasons we had, there was just a rhythm to it. And so there weren't necessarily a lot of those things coming in that would disrupt the rhythm of the season. And then in other ones where I've walked away from it, there's been those things, there's been those factors of, you know, wow, this came up, I didn't expect this. Maybe it was an injury to a player. Maybe it was something you had to deal with administrators or with parents or whatever it might be. Those things that kind of disrupt the rhythm and disrupt your flow of the season, that zap your energy, right? You put a lot of time and attention to that, and it takes you out of what, you know, that flow that you get into, because I could feel it. I mean, those best seasons, when the season would end, you know, you'd get to Monday at 3 o'clock and, you know, the whole week you're like, well, I should be doing this right now instead of this. And it's like, you know, you actually physically could feel like, you know, I've normally been in a different place doing different things at this time of day. So, yeah, I think a lot has to do with those things that are unexpected, and some of them just hit you out of left field and you don't see them coming. And sometimes you can handle them well and get back on track, and sometimes it derails you. It maybe derails the team. It derails the coaching staff. You know, it could be a number of different ways it affects it that really start to, you know, when you look at that idea of burnout, the more of those you have, you know, the more exhausted you're going to be at the end of the season.
Yeah, it's and you know, the phrase burnout in particular, you know, you don't hear, and I don't hear in sports coaches saying, "Boy, I'm really burned out from calling plays. It's just burning me out coming up with call sheets and designing plays." I don't hear, "Boy, you know, I'm really burned out Friday nights from 7 to 10. Just super burned out." I hear people being burned out from other things than the actual work required, or I should say that the core portions of the work. In other industries, people get burned out with the work, not as much with coaching, at least, again, just in my experience. So the thing in my mind is, and I've been pretty, and I've been pretty hard on coaches, and I will continue to be, on how much wasted energy coaches put into things they need to stop wasting energy on. And I'm equally as hard on players as I am on coaches for this, with love for both, because I want a lot of both. And I'm hard on coaches. I think it's more unique because there's very few people who are hard on coaches. You know, I know that I'm in a unique spot in that, you know, I coach coaches the way that they coach. It's hard. It's direct. It's not with a deep concern for your emotional comfort with it. And that any empathy I have for what you're dealing with as a coach is not going to lower my expectations for you. If anything, it's going to raise them. And so when we're talking about burnout, I think there's two things that we really need to pay attention to. And this is where we start getting into the strategy of avoiding burnout or getting out of it. And that is to avoid or get out of a place of burnout, we have to look at the source of our wasted energy, and we have to look at the source of how we gain energy and create it. Because burnout is essentially, Keith, it's essentially, when we think of burnout, and it's probably where the phrase even comes from, burnout isn't that I can't do the work, it's that I don't have the energy to do it. I feel like I'm at the end of my rope, right? I feel overwhelmed for the task at hand. There's not enough energy or time to do all of the things, and I'm deplete of resources. Well, that's mostly an energy issue. It's mostly an energy issue. So if you don't want to be burned out, or you're finding yourself feeling burned out right now with 100% certainty, and feel free to message me on this. I want to help as many of you as I possibly can. Message me and we will talk through it. We will do an audit. Watch how much energy is wasted on things you can't control. Coaches are right now burning energy on youth entitlement, on digital addiction, on administrative incompetence. You name the issue, right? On parental intervention, on, we could just keep going, going, and going on things of wasted energy. And what happens is the most common form of burnout is I am spending so much time and energy on things not the game that I don't even have any left to do the game itself. I'm out. I mean, that's basically what I hear. Is that pretty close to what you hear when you hear burnout from guys?
Yeah, it's. I think that's such a big part of it. It's those things that take you away from the plan, right? Everybody works all off season long to put together the plan for the season, and we know things are going to happen and come in there. But the more things that take you away from the work that really matters, the more you feel that stress, the more your energy is taken away from it. You want to be focused, right? Coaches want to be focused and stay focused on that. Now, when you put that coach in conflict with having to give a lot of attention over here, I need to do this. I mean, it's, you know, part of the reason guys end up sleeping in their office.
So we want to look at two things. And when I say look at, I mean we need to evaluate and do something about two things. Places that are getting our attention, effort, time, energy. But let's look at three things. Attention, time, and energy. Look at those three things. Attention wasted, time wasted, energy wasted. That's what we have to look at. I was having a conversation with a coach in the pros about this yesterday. Just way too much is wasted. Number two is you personally need to, and this is different for everybody, and it'll be different for me than it is for you, but you need to sit down and spend time on a regular basis identifying what gives you energy and how you create your own energy. I'm a big proponent. I think the most underrated skill that's maybe the most important skill in the world is the capacity to create your own energy. And maybe one of the differences in that has grown in the world today is that the number of things that we can give our attention and energy to have significantly outpaced our self-awareness and the number of things that we do to create our own energy. Let me say that again. The number of things that pull energy away from us and that we give our energy to have increased in the volume of those things, as well as how much energy they take. It's significantly outpaced how we create our own energy. And in fact, it's even distracted us from. So one of the first things to help the coach who isn't burned out stay away from burnout is be disciplined, be intentional, be purposeful, and be skillful about not wasting your energy on anything that would run you into the ground or put too much of an emotional strain on you that is a burden you can't carry or is not particularly valuable. I'll give you a perfect example of this. Who does it best? Who do you think? Let me ask you, Keith. Who do you think does that best in the football world with who has almost zero wasted in the coaching ranks? Zero wasted energy.
The guy who comes right to my mind is Bill Belichick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And don't misinterpret Bill Belichick, zero wasted energy, from what you see at his press conferences, the emotionless robot. Like, first of all, that's not Bill Belichick. That's the guy he chooses to be in front of the media because the media does not deserve any of his energy. Just so you're all clear, that's not Bill Belichick. That is strategic portrayal by Bill Belichick of a guy who has to do that stuff, because here's what Bill Belichick has understood and calculated. What is all media for him and his team? What is all of it? Wasted energy. It's all wasted energy. Now, Tom Brady hasn't made that exact same decision personally, and that's okay. That's fine. But Bill Belichick has decided organizationally, media is wasted energy. So when you see him up front, guess what he puts into it? Zero. Because he wants his energy reserved for stuff that matters to him. Now switch to a college program. Is that what I advise Bill Belichick approach of wasted energy to media in a college program? Well, probably not. Nick Saban chooses a close approach to that, but occasionally he'll put some energy into it. But he puts energy into the media when? And he's on the record for this. He puts energy into the media to talk to who? When he talks to the media with those things he goes off on, who's he talking to?
I mean, I think a lot of it's for recruiting.
For recruiting, and then it's for his players, because he usually doesn't say a ton from the recruiting perspective, right? But I will say this.
No, but I mean, it's the image of the program.
Yeah, correct. But he's talking to his players. So when he puts energy in, he makes sure any energy he puts into media has a purpose, and that purpose is for getting a message across to the locker room or something like that. Whereas if you're at a different program, say Georgia Tech, pouring a ton of energy into media, a ton. Why? Well, because they're trying to shift the narrative, display a culture, create more attraction, doing a bunch of stuff in recruiting. They're trying to change a brand. And so now that all serves a purpose, but they're not doing it from a place of resentfulness. They're doing it from a place of strategy. So the point is you have to do your work. You have to make your decisions. You have to decide where your energy is going. And every time you put energy into something, energy's got to stay away or come from some other spot. Second thing is, since those two things have shifted, right, where we waste our energy is we got to know how to create our own energy. Where does energy come from for you? How do you create it yourself? What are the things that you do? Don't say winning creates energy, because if winning creates energy, you're screwed. Of course, winning creates energy. Winning creates energy for everybody. But it also, winning also creates apathy. So it creates temporary energy, which is what all energy is. I'm talking about, how do you create energy in your moments of stillness? How do you create energy through your moments of action? Not consequence, but action. Does reading a book give you energy? Does interacting with your kids give you energy? Does, like for me, I'll give you an example. For me, what gives me energy is reading old books and uncovering old truths and reading about different leaders, different societies, different peoples, different minorities in history that like a minority group of people, not how we understand the word minority today, at least in America, but minorities of people who were in majorities of a different opinion, and watching how the world has been shaped by that, watching, seeing something that applied just the same 4,000 years ago as it does today. For me, that's energy giving. And that's how I create energy, because it reinforces to me realness, truth, things that I have in my power. And so I literally get energy from reading books. Now, it has to be the right kind of book, but I get energy that way. So if I'm ever feeling like, I'll go read about something that happened 1,500 years ago, and I'll read for an hour or 2 hours. I'll put that book down, and I'll feel capable. I'll feel energized. I'll feel ready to go out and do something and implement and act and live on this reality, because I've seen a reality that exists in the world. And I'm going to go make it useful during this brief time that I have. That's energizing for me. So those are the two things to do right away. And what you'll find right away is, you know, this is a deeply personal choice. It doesn't matter what anybody else says. If the thing that gives me energy is a waste of energy for you, good. If the thing that is a waste of energy for me gives energy to you, great. It's personal. Some people think books are boring. Okay. I don't care. It gives me energy. And if it's a waste of your time, well, then do something else. But you've got to go do your personal work on this, because you're going to find yourself in front of things that take your energy away. And if you're not self-aware, you're going to continue giving energy into things that will just drain you. You'll keep doing that. And then you'll blame those things, not yourself. And then second is, you're going to find moments where, and I love how you said it, Keith, you're going to find moments where the disruptions to your flow of work, unexpected events are going to show up, and you will need to create and tap into energy that didn't previously exist. And if you don't know how to create it or where it comes from, it's going to be the equivalent of getting underneath 315 pounds in a squat rack and finding yourself unprepared to move that weight because you didn't do the work beforehand. Don't get caught getting under the rack of coaching and not prepare yourself to carry that weight and move that weight. Do the work. Move your way there. Don't start with 315. Start with 135 and 185 and 225, et cetera. But recognize, like, you're going to have to put 300 or 400 pounds on that rack a number of times throughout your coaching career. And you're going to have to do sets of two sometimes. You're going to have to do sets of 20 sometimes. Sometimes you're going to have to start doing sets and you don't know how many reps you're going to have to do, which actually sounds like a hell of a workout now that I'm saying it out loud. That's what's going to happen. This is one of those topics that, man, I wish we could just spend like, you know, I wish we could just go like 3 or 4 hours or do a whole series. Like we could talk about this every week, Keith.
Well, I think some of the elite guys, Brian, understand how to handle this. Not that things are going so well for the guys who are at the top that they're never going to feel that way. They might, and they might not talk about it, but a lot of those guys do have ways that they handle it. They do have routines. They do have an approach to it. And I think that's what this is about, is developing your own systems for handling that, just like we would develop an offense or a defense.
Yeah, and I don't know, a good system for handling it might be E plus R equals O. I have it written down right here. Like E plus R equals O is a system for handling it. And let me come back to this, Keith, because you said it and I was going to come back to it later. So we're abundantly clear here. Burnout likelihood does not decrease the higher you go. One of the things about every coach who's coaching at the highest level, Belichick, Saban, Chris Peterson, Lincoln Riley, Pete Carroll, Andy Reid, you know, you get it over into other sports, right? Talking about other sports as well, and these other coaches, right? Your Popoviches, your Phil Jacksons, your Eric Spoelstras, like all these different areas, right? People who've won and performed and competed at a very high level. Burnout isn't less likely for them. They are simply capable of carrying that load better. Burnout is way more likely for those guys than other people. This is the big misnomer that you said this earlier. I'm going to come back to it. The biggest misnomer, the biggest misunderstanding in leadership and culture is that once you create a great culture and once you really become a great leader, that everything gets smoother and easier and flows. And it is absolutely the opposite. Great cultures are hard to create and even way harder to sustain. Great cultures require effort and energy to create. They require all of your effort and energy at an exhausting level to hold on to them for an extended period of time and sustain them, and let alone improve them over time. So burnout is way more likely once you get to success than on your pathway to success. Have you ever thought about it that way, Keith?
No, but I mean, it makes a lot of sense that's how it's going to happen. And I mean, that's, I think, also a little bit of a misnomer because, you know, success is fleeting. I mean, it's, you know, that champion who won the national championship 4 years ago, Brian? Like, quick, name it.
It was either Clemson or Alabama.
Maybe, yeah, throw an Ohio State in there. You got it.
The only thing that would be easier than that would be if you asked me which Division III football team won a national championship in the last year.
That one's easier.
I don't know.
Whitewater
or Mount Union. They played like 9 years in a row. I don't know.
Yeah. But the point is, like, you could guess at it. You don't know that. I mean, it's because everybody's working for, you know, the success now, the success in the future. You know, you're not going to rest on that unless you're a guy who's ready to retire.
And so let me give a couple things here, just a couple pieces. A couple additional things, because I don't want to go too long here on this episode. Burnout happens because we give way too much power and attention to things that we don't control. It's why I'm so adamant on teaching E plus R equals O. If you are giving energy and you are focusing your attention and you are banging your head against the wall on things that you cannot change and control, you are going to burn out because those things are not going to change. That's why I rail against anybody who says this generation of youth is different and blames this youth for entitlement and whatever else that they have, because a generation of youth is going to act like a generation of youth. They are not going to change as an entire generation. They are going to mature over time under great leadership. You are going to burn yourself out if you're just looking at kids and then blaming them for being kids. Lead them. It's on your response, not the event. And that's true of everything. Administration is going to be administration. Your job is to understand it. Parents are going to be parents. Yes, they're doing some new and some different things right now than parents did 30 years ago. Figure it out, adjust, re-strategize, and build your program and your leadership to respond to the event that you have. The only way to improve events is to produce better outcomes through better responses now. Don't blame and judge and BCD about the E. That's going to burn you out. The event is what the event is. Let's adjust. Second thing is on E plus R equals O is that burnout happens when the responses we're engaging in are no longer producing better outcomes or producing the outcomes that we want. And we are engaging in more and more and more energy expenditure and effort and time in our responses to produce either the exact same outcome or worse outcomes. So the fastest way to get away from burnout after looking at our energy usage is look at ways where we can increase our production. Look for ways to to produce better results that we can actually see. People get burned out on working out when they quote unquote plateau. What is plateauing? Putting in the same energy, not getting any increased better output. And then we get burned out because we're frustrated. This is why in businesses and organizations, quote unquote, employee engagement was backwards. People waited for the feeling to show up and they thought, boy, when employees get engaged, they become very productive. And that's not true. It's not waiting for a feeling and then engagement is there and then people start acting better, then they produce better outcomes. It's the other way around. You start doing better things, producing better outcomes, and that process feels good, and that's what engages you. So after you do an audit of your energy and put it into better places, second, and after you look at not spending time, attention, and energy on things you can't control, but instead responding to them, then third is, okay, now you're in a position to actually go produce. So put yourself in a position where your action can start producing some kind of outcome or result that engages you, dials you in, pulls you in, and energizes you. So it's the need to feel productive and valued and capable and to see a path to produce what we want and not to feel like we're banging our head against a wall and nothing is happening. That's what burns us out. That's the end spot. It's when our energy doesn't actually deliver some kind of something that moves that needle. And then here's the third thing, Keith. The third thing is in coaching in particular, burnout happens. This is really specific to coaches because you've put too much on your plate or to the end, you are doing too much based on the ego. It's a lack of delegation. And people say, oh, I can't delegate. And they say, oh, those people aren't good enough. And I've heard all of them under the sun. Lack of delegation is often a subtle ego play. Nobody can do it as good as me. If you're not delegating because nobody can do it as good as you, that's a sign that you are an average leader. Now, if you just got in that spot because you got to go down your path. But if you've been in that spot to the point of burnout, what's a sign that you have made some mistakes in leadership? You haven't coached, you haven't educated, you haven't built and grown and developed the people underneath you, and you've let your ego win because you've kept too much on your plate and managed it and done all of it because you're better than everybody else or they're not good enough, whatever it is we tell ourselves. And then we get overwhelmed by that amount of work and burned out, not even to account for the fact that some of those things on your plate are things you shouldn't be dealing with at all because you should have just either ignored them or push them way further down inside, your team or your program, or let somebody else be responsible for it. So the process of, or the act of putting too much on your plate as a coach, and how often having so much on your plate because we don't delegate it is actually due to ego, and that we are our own worst enemy when it comes to how busy we are and how overwhelmed we are two things that coaches in particular really, really need to look for. And again, in the case of burnout potential or being in a place of burnout, that's one of the earliest places to look after your energy and after really getting good at managing the system of E+R=O as a tool.
Well, BK, I think a good tool to really stay focused, to stay disciplined, something that you've put together, I enjoy reading every morning. And more as I've read them, Brian, I've felt like, wow, he wrote that one for me. there's just a lot of good application there. So you're doing a great job with that. How can our listeners get the Daily Discipline?
Go to dailydiscipline.com. You put your name or your email address in. If you're on Twitter, you can follow me at @tbriankite. And if you see across the coaching community, I send out the email every morning at 6 a.m. And in every email, there's a message that anybody who's a subscriber can click on that message and reshare that message on specifically on their Twitter feed and then, share with others to view that day. And so if you're on there and you're on Twitter and you end up seeing these messages show up from coaches, this is where they're coming from. They're coming from the Daily Discipline email that I write and send every morning at 6 a.m.
Listeners, if you don't know by now, we said we're about midway through the season. We have been creating episodes for you, like the Leadership Journey, that are focused on things that can help you right now in season. So we're going to continue to do that here for the next several months, and then we'll get into our off-season mode. But in general, shorter episodes. Brian and I do this one usually between 35, 45 minutes each week. A really good one to reflect on and I think get your mind right for the week. But check out everything we're doing and the show notes for all these at blogs.usafootball.com. BK, as always, it was great to talk with you here today about situations and things that affect coaches, and hopefully we help somebody out there today.
Yeah, definitely. I hope so. If one person got one thing, this was time well spent.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.